to prevent this timeline from getting any worse.
She may not be here now, but I believe it is wise to assume she will be here soon, Leopold said, talking about Seraph. He stroked his bare chin and stared out over the armies. I'm assuming that's why you're keeping your champions back.
It is, Nathan half-lied. Leopold knew about Nathan's battle plan. This question was purely for the benefit of those around them. Seraph's presence was the other complicating factor to any plan that relied too heavily on champions. Even if Nathan didn't care about slaughtering a couple thousand Federation soldiers, sending his champions to the front line risked the battle in a different way. The only counter to an enemy champion was a champion of his own, and if the enemy champion was stronger than his, he needed several champions. Everybody knew this, and armies drew morale from the power of the heroes that led them. The Federation army held its defensive line around Vera's tower, not because it was convinced that it could win, but because it knew that it had a duo gem champion backing it. Nathan imagined a scenario where he sent his champions against the Federation, recklessly trying to secure the victory as fast as possible, while losing as few soldiers as he could. Faye burned out companies of soldiers, leaving behind molten piles of flesh and steel. Sen left craters where the enemy had stood in formation. Sunstorm cut down their officers and elites. Then Seraph showed up and blew one of his girls away. By the time the other two reacted, Seraph could engage another. Nathan and Leopold moved too slowly. The battle ended before it started. The Federation army lay in ruin. Nathan and his champions died so early in their careers that they didn't even make the history books. Not that such a scenario could ever happen. Leopold would have refused to participate in such a foolhardy plan. Despite his age and power, he was far from his binding stones. He had no way to teleport to safety. Although Nathan suspected that Leopold had some additional defense, an escape plan, or at least a champion hiding nearby. He hadn't spotted any other champions, however, and Sunstorm hadn't either. Everybody watched the soldiers form up into ranks. Many of the Beastkin companies grew rowdy, but their officers kept them in check. Most of the officers were older men and women, and their equipment showed wear from previous battles.
A lot more Beastkin responded to the levy than I expected, Anna said. Some of them even brought their own equipment.
The Empire dislikes paying to equip a soldier twice, Leopold said. Many of them will have been asked to fight before and have kept their equipment from the first time. I understand we used to ask every recruit to bring their own weapons centuries ago, but most people dislike spending their own money in order to fight for others.
I can require it of them if they prefer, Anna said.
Yes, and then you become the countess who forced poor, unarmed peasants to go into battle. Leopold gave Anna a condescending look. There's your rights as a noble, and then there's what you can actually get away with.
Noblesse oblige, yes, Anna muttered. Why did so many Beastkin come, then?
Because you're paying them a fortune, Nathan said.
Anna blinked and stared at him.
Then she looked at Cuda, who nodded in agreement with Nathan.
I am? Anna said.
Actually, I am, Leopold said, on behalf of His Majesty.
But I recruited them. They're even wearing my emblem, Anna protested. I pay my guards well and have offered more for this campaign. But I don't think it's enough to attract hundreds of Beastkin from other counties.
Nathan raised an eyebrow.
The lowest paid Beastkin here is being paid as much per day as your guards normally earn in a week. The veterans, the officers that keep them in line and who brought their own equipment, are getting paid roughly double that.
Anna's eyes nearly popped out of her head. That's ridiculous.
They are at the highest risk of death, Leopold said. More to the point, that's what the Imperial Army pays levied soldiers. You recruited them under my authority, which means they must be paid according to the standards set by His Majesty.
By the time they go home, each beastkin will have more money than his entire village makes in a year, Anna said.
Now you know why so many came out to fight, Nathan said.
It seems a little unfair to my guards, Anna mumbled.
Your guards have secure employment. The other soldiers you levied are being paid extra and are protecting their home. They already have livelihoods here, and many will make connections. Some will even remain as soldiers or guards once we take Fort Tobram, giving them a well-paying job.
Nathan pointed to various companies as he spoke, and Anna's gaze followed his hand.
But the beastkin will go back to their villages in different counties, and it may be years before they have another chance to do more than live off the land. Their homes aren't under threat, at least not yet. They'll still have farmland to harvest and forests to hunt in. They need a damn good reason to risk their lives.
Goddess, you're good at this, Anna said, staring at Nathan in wonder. Why did your father disavow you again?
I imagine because he actually likes beastkin, Leopold said dryly. Understanding war beyond the idea of stabbing the enemy probably hurt his chances as well.
Nathan hid his surprise. His father in this timeline had issues with beastkin? Nathan spent as little time dwelling on his implanted memories as possible, so he was unaware of this fact. He really should spend some time meditating on his past in this timeline, in order to avoid any nasty surprises in the future. Furthermore, Leopold really disliked Nathan's father. Hints had been given earlier, but Leopold no longer bothered to hide his disdain for the other bastion.
That explains a bit, yes, Anna said. Fine, I get it. The beastkin, that is. And also why you've had no difficulties wrangling them into a proper army, Nathan. My captain, Lord Flight, fell into despair after his first attempt to bring the beastkin into line.
Nathan had met Flight earlier, a straight-laced man roughly the same age as Nathan. He ruled a barony to the north, which included another town in Garrick County, and owed fealty to the Von Clare household. Given Flight's defining trait was his love of ale, and the fact he was in the process of expanding the family brewery, Nathan felt no surprise that the man struggled with beastkin.
I'd take credit for being an amazing general, but the truth is that it's mostly because I'm a bastion, Nathan admitted.
He scratched the back of his head. Behind him, he heard Faye let out a small whine. He ignored her.
I imagine the dozens of beastkin currently working for you helped as well,
Cuda added.
The veterans fell into line when they saw that you already worked with beastkin.
Faye muttered something that Nathan didn't hear. Glancing behind him, he saw Sen whispering into Faye's ear. The beastkin's ears sat flat against her head, and her tail hung low.
Is something wrong, Faye? Nathan asked. She glowered at him.
Nathan looked at the others, who shrugged. Presumably, they hadn't paid any attention to Faye's mood. Given she was his lover, he was more sensitive to her feelings. Finally, Faye said, It's not because you're a bastion.
Faye? Nathan asked, surprised.
They trust you because you proved that you deserve to be trusted, Faye blurted out. Her ears shot up, and her eyes bore into Nathan's. I spoke to the old warriors, and they all said the same thing. Bastion Nathan knows how to lead. You gave them orders they thought were right. You've done that in all of our battles. It's your experience that makes you trusted, not what you are.
All eyes turned from Faye to Nathan.
Well, wasn't this awkward? Faye talked up his experience, but Nathan shouldn't have it. Nathan knew he had been coming close to the line in regard to using his wealth of knowledge from his timeline. This outburst proved that he had probably pushed things too far. But he didn't know if he could stop. What was the point of coming back in time if he failed? Was hiding his knowledge and ability to avoid being found out worth the risk of letting Domar fall into ruin again? No, not in Nathan's eyes, but he needed to lessen the suspicion building up regarding him. People like Faye adored him and were safe. But what about his enemies?
A declaration of heresy could end everything in an instant.
Leopold spoke up first.
Well, I suppose I was right to take the risk and appoint you as bastion here. My suspicion that your dismissal by your father made you a good fit has proven correct.
That poker-faced smile of Leopold sat firmly on his face. How much did he suspect?
Nathan chose not to think too much about it. He let the topic slide. Everybody moved on to the subject of battle tactics. The armies were in position. Due to their inferior numbers and the open terrain, laying siege was out of the question. A direct offensive was the only option.
So we're relying on the soldiers? Vera asked. If the champions are going to hang back as a contingency to deal with Seraph,
we'll provide limited ranged support for the soldiers, Nathan said.
Except I'm pretty sure some of us have our own mission. Vera pointed at her tower, which sat inert in the center of the Federation encampment. We're taking the tower, aren't we?
That's the objective of the battle. Nathan asked, are you suggesting something else?
I have a cairn in my tower. It's tied to my magic. Rather than limited ranged support from back here, I can provide a lot more if I connect to my cairn directly. The Federation will retreat, surrender, or be destroyed once I'm back in control of the tower, Vera explained.
You brought the idea up earlier, Nathan said.
And?
To say that it had been a topic of debate was an understatement. Anna shot a glare at Leopold, who pointedly ignored her.
The old bastion favored caution. Use the superior power of the beastkin to win the conventional battle, pepper the Federation with sorcery from afar, and engage Seraph en masse with champions and bastions should she appear. A sound plan, if a little too safe, and likely to cause significant casualties among the beastkin. By contrast, Anna liked Vera's plan. As Vera lacked any way to boost her sorcery, her spells would be useless against Seraph. The power of Ifrit allowed Sen to harm Seraph, despite her innate protections of 2 gems. Anna's argument was that Vera contributed more if she took control of her tower. The fact that Anna argued so strongly in favor of the plan made Nathan question who came up with the idea to begin with. Vera hadn't pushed to be involved with any of the planning. She hadn't floated the idea that she wouldn't join the attack, given her tower was being taken back. But Nathan got the sense she wanted to avoid this battle at all costs. Something was awry.
I'm assuming you still can't connect to your cairn from here? Nathan asked.
The tower is undamaged, so its wards prevent anybody from tapping into the cairn from outside, Vera said.
You prevented yourself from accessing your own cairn from outside the tower? Nathan asked.
Only if my link was broken, which it was when you pulled me through the gateway.
Vera raised an eyebrow at him, as if to dare Nathan to challenge her on that.
Her words made sense. While Nathan was intrinsically connected to his binding stone, a cairn was merely a local font of magic. There were many ways to disrupt a sorcerer's connection to his cairn. Capturing a sorcerer's tower often employed strategies reliant on breaking that connection, then killing or capturing the sorcerer before he reconnected to the cairn. After all, once disconnected, it took anywhere from minutes to hours for a sorcerer to reconnect to his cairn. Vera needed time once they got into the tower for this plan to work. Somebody needed to protect her. Yet another gap between bastions and sorcerers, and another reason why sorcerers wanted to become bastions. A binding stone was an effectively infinite source of energy, and one that the sorcerer couldn't lose their connection to. Or at least, not normally. As Kadria proved, normal went out the window when messengers became involved. She had severed Nathan's connections to most of his binding stones as easily as Nathan might cut off a sorcerer from their cairns.
If we're to get you into the tower, we'll need to make a path and protect you while you reconnect to the cairn, Nathan explained.
This is where any proposal became unstuck during earlier debate.
I won't put Faye and the others out of position.
You won't need to, Vera declared. I have enough power to push through a few companies of soldiers with the help of one of your summoned horses. Once there, I can get inside the tower and activate my remaining summons.
That's too risky, Anna said. If we're sending in Vera like that, then why not push harder? Once she gets on top of the tower, she'll more than make up for the extra losses we'll take by being more aggressive. You can't tell me that dragging the battle out for longer is better for us.
It could be, Nathan wanted to say. But so much of this depended on Seraph. You're right, if we pull this off properly, Nathan said, which is why I'll go with Vera.
Everybody stared at him. But you're in command, Anna said.
She looked at Leopold, who shrugged in return. They're your soldiers. You even have your own nobles and officers commanding them. Fay and Sunstorm are trained commanders as well. Everybody knows the order of battle, Nathan said. But if we're modifying the plan at this stage, it makes sense that I go with Vera. My binding stone is closer than Leopold's, so I can react more swiftly to any sudden events. Plus, he has more combat experience and is better suited to fighting Seraph. It is risky, but an approach I feel I might take if I were feeling reckless, Leopold said. Nathan couldn't tell if Leopold was chiding him or agreeing with him. He chose to take the words at face value and assume that the old man was letting him do what he wanted. Vera? Nathan asked. I won't say no to a chance to get back into my tower sooner, Vera answered. Her eyes met Nathan's. I didn't expect you or Leopold to stick your neck out like this, but I'll take it. I'll return the favor with an impressive light show once inside. Chapter 37. The strategy session came to a close, and everybody dispersed. Anna held her own meeting with her officers. Presumably, she told them about the change of plans. Nathan suspected at least Lord Flights would approach him afterward, if only to confirm specifics. Normally, a baron might be less willing to annoy his liege by openly looking to somebody else for authority. But Nathan was the bastion, and Flights seemed comfortable with his title. Anna wasn't going to punish one of her few barons, after all. In fact, Anna seemed to have a surprisingly small retinue for a countess. Most of those present were knights, baronets, and unlanded nobles. Flights was the only baron. Nathan wondered if the other barons had refused to fight, or if Anna hadn't asked. Most barons owed their true loyalty to the Archduke, not the local countess. Anna controlled the military and could require their assistance to quell threats. A baron's land comes with the requirement that he bear arms upon request of the Empire. But the barons didn't owe her fealty. Nobility annoyed Nathan. He found it overly complex. Who appointed whose great-great-great-great-grandfather as baron a couple of centuries ago mattered more than who governed the land he lived in? To say nothing of the bitter power struggle between those at the very top. Nathan didn't need to imagine the sort of nonsense that must take place between the three archdukes of the Empire and with the Emperor himself. His true birthplace, the Kingdom of Falmir, had suffered through a truly devastating transition of power. He often forgot that it was still a kingdom in this timeline, calling it Falmir instead of the Kingdom, as many others did.
Nathan, the Beastkin companies are ready, Fay said, shaking him out of his thoughts.
He rubbed the bridge of his nose and tried to focus himself. As a bastion of the Anfeng Empire, picking fights about the concept of nobility was unwise at best. Better to not waste time thinking about it.
They know that they're leading the charge? Nathan asked.
Yep, Fay chirped. They didn't seem that surprised. And I think half of their food supplies are actually alcohol.
She furrowed her brow in concern. Nathan stared at her.
Try not to talk too loudly about that. I'm guessing at least one of the old wolves knew how to handle the quartermaster. So long as they share the booze and don't crack open the barrels until after we win, I'll turn a blind eye.
Isn't Anna paying for all the food and drink?
Faye's eyes widened as she realized what was happening. She can consider it a lesson in managing her supplies and logistics better, Nathan said dryly.
If she lets the Beastkin get one over her like this, imagine what mercenaries will do to her. Better she learns now, and what better way to learn than by picking up the check? The sun sat firmly above their heads. Not a cloud marred the sky. Banners waved in the air above each army. The enemy encampment had emptied onto the field in front of the pass.
Still no sign of Seraph, Nathan muttered.
Isn't that a good thing? Vera asked. I'd prefer to know where she is, he said, but we can't afford to waste any more time.
Nathan signaled for his army to advance. Slowly, his soldiers marched toward the enemy. Inexperienced soldiers often said that the waiting was the hardest part. Veterans thought, but rarely said, that watching their friends die while they lived on was the hardest part. Dead soldiers didn't think, but they would probably say that the hardest part was the actual battle, or maybe the part where they lay dying. For Nathan, the hardest parts were these very moments, watching the armies converge on each other at an agonizingly slow pace. Every second reminded him of past battles, of battlefields covered in corpses. No order could stop the battle now, Nathan knew. That was what made this part of the battle unbearable for him. He felt forced to watch as the battle inched closer and closer to reality. Eventually, arrows would be fired, or a spell cast, or a melee would break out. Then the battle would be on, and Nathan's mind busy with tactics, contingencies, and ensuring that he played his role correctly. For now, he waited. The armies clashed, and Nathan let out a breath he knew he was holding. "Were you this tense during the siege?" Vera asked, a look of concern on her face.
"No, I didn't give the order to start the siege," Nathan replied.
"Oh." Everybody else had spread out prior to the start of the battle. Sen hurled fireballs over the heads of the Imperial soldiers. Her figure was easily visible due to the constant arc of flames flying from her and the glowing triangles around her greatsword. Magical barriers blocked some of her spells, but she shattered most of them. The Federation magic users lacked the power to match Sen. Faye sat astride an automaton horse next to Sen. Occasionally, the Beastkin champion issued an order, but she mostly watched. Her role was to command the assault and protect Sen if necessary. Elsewhere, Leopold kept Anna company. Although both bastions considered it unlikely, Seraph might attempt to assassinate Anna when she attacked. Leopold had the strength to counter her and withstand Seraph's superior power for long enough. Although not visible, Sunstorm lurked in the distance. She kept watch for Seraph. Her ability to teleport and hide made her invaluable as an early warning system. The battle dragged on. The Beastkin pushed forward. Howls rose up from the front ranks, and the wolves shattered a company of heavily armored knights. Imperial soldiers, Beastkin and human alike, swarmed into the opening and tore a hole in the Federation line. Reserves poured forth from the rear of the Federation army, but they had to fight past fleeing soldiers from the front line. Panic ensued. As the Federation struggled to prevent a full-blown rout, Nathan kicked his horse forward. Vera followed him, and both of them galloped toward the front line. Faye spotted him and snapped out new orders. The entire battle shifted in a moment. Companies of soldiers that had stayed out of the battle surged forward. The hole in the Federation line was pushed open farther. The Imperial soldiers applied more pressure to the Federation, who fought back fiercely. A gap opened up in the Imperial lines. Several Beastkin ushered Nathan and Vera through the gap. Nathan noticed that all of them were horse Beastkin, their long, fine tails swaying energetically behind them.
"Carve a hole!" Nathan shouted as he and Vera approached the thick of the battle.
He drew his sword.
He blasted a hole in the Federation defenders with a fourth-rank spell. Many of those he knocked down got back up, but most didn't. Fire poured down on the rest. Vera's staff blazed with an endless stream of flames. Nathan allowed her to take the lead and blew away any soldiers that got too close. Spears bounced off the steel frames of the automaton horses they rode.
Nathan winced as one soldier successfully hit him in the calf before blowing away the offender. Then the soldiers vanished. The horses leaped over a pile of rubble that had once been the outer wall of the tower. Row after row of tents flew past as Nathan and Vera rode toward the base of the tower without stopping. A handful of soldiers and camp followers stared at them. Some grabbed weapons and gave chase. The doors to the tower were shut. They glowed faintly, locked with magic. Nathan leaped off his horse. Vera followed suit more sedately, demonstrating less experience in jumping off horses mid-battle. She strode up to the door and unlocked it. The stone double doors swung open without a sound. Looking behind them, Nathan realized that the Federation soldiers hadn't given up. Rather than blow them away, he took the simpler route. He unsummoned the horses and followed Vera inside the tower. In the distance, he thought he heard the battle getting closer, as if soldiers were pushing forward to the tower at a rapid pace. The moment he stepped inside the tower, the doors slammed shut. Vera's back faced him, and she gestured for him to follow him with her hand. She didn't slow down. Her stride was purposeful as she walked across the bottom level of her tower. The tower remained well lit, presumably as the lights drew power from the cairn. A few corpses remained here, Nathan noticed. Not all of them were on the ground level, which is where Vera had fought off the intruders, but most were. According to Vera, the doors to her tower automatically locked upon closing. She compared them to a magical deadbolt. Anybody who wanted to open the doors needed a magical key to match the spell keeping them closed. If the Federation closed the doors, or let them be closed for any reason, then those still inside the tower would have been trapped. Some of the corpses probably belonged to people who starved to death. Accompanying the corpses were the remains of Vera's summons. Plates of armor and weapons, mostly. Vera had more summons within the tower, supposedly. Nathan couldn't see where they might be hidden. He caught up to Vera and made it to the stairwell before her. Turning while he waited for her, he noticed that she had stopped. Vera stood close to the center of the room. She didn't speak or react to Nathan's questioning gaze. This tower contained a cairn, a pile of rocks imbued with magic that allowed sorcerers to easily channel large volumes of magic from the ley lines. Nathan suspected that the cairn was underneath them, although he didn't see any way in the tower to go underground. He met Vera's gaze. She stared back at him impassively. No magic came to life in her hands, but that didn't mean much. Nathan couldn't hear anybody outside, or anybody inside for that matter. This tower contained only the two of them.
"So, are you going to join me at the top of the tower, or try to kill me here?" Nathan asked.
Chapter 38.
"At least, I'm assuming that's what you're deciding on now," Nathan added.
"I can't tell. I'm pretty convinced that you've been helping the Federation, but you've done a pretty terrible job of it."
"You don't look surprised," Vera replied after a long pause.
"Like I said, I'm pretty convinced that you haven't really been on my side," Nathan said.
"Define your side, Nathan," Vera said.
An excellent question, in Nathan's mind.
"The side that doesn't want an army of demons pouring into the countryside?" Nathan tried. "That stunt by the Federation could have wiped out the entire county, or even more. A demonic invasion away from a binding stone is notoriously difficult to stop and attracts unwanted attention."
Vera frowned at him. "Who considers it notorious? And attention from who? You've mentioned more of your secret bastion knowledge than Leopold has ever let slip. Most of the books I've been able to get my hands on say nothing about many of the things you've mentioned. I asked an old friend of mine about those messengers you brought up months ago, and he hadn't heard of them."
"Of course he hadn't. The idea of demonic generals capable of crushing bastions like ants was too terrifying for the public to know about. Nathan doubted even the Emperor knew much about them."
"There's an uninhabited peninsula to the east of the Federation that has been overrun by demons. Don't you find it strange that nobody talks much about it?" Nathan said.
Vera remained silent, but grimaced.
That's the side I'm on, Vera. The one that doesn't want the world turned into an uninhabitable wasteland, Nathan continued. Hence why I became worried when you didn't seem to be on the same side.
I helped you stabilize the ley lines, Vera protested. I even fought the Federation when they attacked. How did you even know to suspect me?
Initially, I was uncertain, but I grew suspicious of you because of how unwilling you were to take action to stop the bandits, Nathan explained. The Federation had funded them in the past, the ley lines were being disrupted, and now the bandits were attacking a town. But you didn't lift a finger to help an old friend. Anna described you as embittered toward the Empire.
Are you sure you weren't merely paranoid? Vera said dryly.
I prefer to think that I plan for contingencies, Nathan replied.
He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes.
One of those included the possibility that either you or Anna were working with the Federation.
Anna? Vera scoffed. You suspected Anna?
Briefly, Nathan shrugged. She had reason to be upset with the Empire, and there was nothing to suggest that she was incompetent. The opposite, in fact. She cares too much about her family, her pride, and her position in the Empire to betray it, however. To say nothing of what would happen to her brother if she betrayed the Empire. He's still fighting against Trafome up north, after all.
You seem convinced from the start that somebody was working with the Federation, Vera said after a pause.
Because that's how the Federation operates. It expands by creating new provinces and offering power to people who are bitter that they have been overlooked. Tanius is very, very good at finding people who will do things that they otherwise wouldn't because they have been refused things that they feel they deserve.
Vera stared at him.
You know Tanius? I know how he operates rather well, Nathan said.
Elaborating this much was dangerous, he realized. But not talking about the manipulative old bastard hanging over Vera's head was far more dangerous.
And you thought Tanius was interested in me? Vera asked.
Maybe. I didn't know for sure until very recently. Until then, I only had your suspicious behavior, Nathan admitted.
Her refusal to stop the bandits. Her aggression toward him when he first arrived. Her dismissive attitude toward the idea of the Federation attacking the Empire, even though they had been funding the bandits for years.
But I helped you, Vera protested.
I'll admit I'm not sure about your motives for doing that, he said, scratching the back of his neck. But you outed yourself in the battle at the Cairn when you chased after Sunstorm. You should have died when you fought her. There's no way that you could have survived a one-on-one fight with her. I assumed that you passed on a message when you chased her.
Shit, Vera muttered. I knew it would look bad in retrospect, but I didn't think you already suspected me by then.
Really? I all but accused you of potentially working with them when I pointed out that a Federation champion was skulking around your tower, he pointed out.
Vera blinked. She opened her mouth to reply, then closed it.
Moments later, she covered her face with her palm and stared up at the very top of her tower.
Nathan thought she was going to scream in frustration.
He glanced around, checking for any signs of an ambush. Nothing had changed. No summons had emerged from the shadows, and he neither saw nor felt anybody arrive. He couldn't feel Seraph's power outside, either.
So you knew it was me from the start, Vera said when she recomposed herself.
Like I said, I suspected somebody. You confirmed my suspicions through your actions, he said. You wanted to become a bastion. The Empire refused you. You became angry. Leopold frustrated you because he stopped helping you and continued to keep his secrets, and eventually Anna gave up on you. Then Tanius offered you the Binding Stone in exchange for betraying the Empire. All you had to do was undermine the defense of Garrick Pass and constantly mislead Anna.
Vera grimaced and looked away. She didn't refute his story. Maybe he had missed a few details, but he seemed to have gotten it largely right.
What I don't understand is why you helped me stop the Federation, Nathan asked.
Because they didn't tell me everything, Vera muttered. I'm not lying when I say that you've told me more about Bastions than anybody else I've ever met. Everybody, Sunstorm, Tanya, Seraph, Leopold, they all know so much more, but kept me in the dark. Then you told me what the Federation's plan really was.
Demons, Nathan said.
Yes, Vera said. She looked him in the eyes. That's why I initially helped you, and what I told Sunstorm. I refused to help the Federation with a plan that relied on a demonic invasion of the county. Something clicked in Nathan's mind. The gap between the Vera in front of him, who was so angry and bitter at the Empire, and the heroic Vera from his timeline. They were the same person. There was no gap. Instead, the heroic Vera saw the consequences of her betrayal firsthand. She saw demonic portals open in her homeland, demons tear apart Garrick County and destroy Trontia, and possibly even the death of one of her oldest friends. History never recorded the fact that she helped the Federation destroy the Empire. The Federation never admitted that they were involved in any way beyond attacking the Empire, as intentionally starting a demonic invasion was heresy of the highest order. What history recorded was a Vera that saw the chaos she had wrought and chose to die fighting against the people who had caused it, rather than silently take the reward the Federation offered her. Nathan wondered how much of what he thought he knew from his timeline was wrong, or at least slanted. Leopold was a vastly different man to how he had imagined him to be. "Once I returned to my tower, that wasn't the end of it," Vera continued, bringing Nathan back to the current timeline. "Seraph wanted me to help with the assault on your castle. She explained that you would be in the middle of dealing with a demonic invasion. I realized that she had planned for the possibility that you would stabilize the ley lines."
"And then?" Nathan asked.
"Then Leopold turned up and acted like his secretive, condescending self. He seemed more interested in testing you than stopping the Federation. I was convinced that I was right to support Seraph." Vera gave Nathan a humorless smile. "Except something about you changed him. You were a step ahead of Seraph. You knew about the Cascade, as you called it. Despite your bullshit explanation about how you didn't understand what was going on, everybody knew that you had been busy planning for a demonic invasion since the moment you captured Sin." Vera laughed. "Goddess, you even stalled the invasion for weeks. Sunstorm kept asking me if I had heard anything from you, as she became convinced that you had been invaded and Fias had forgotten to tell Seraph."
"You're beating around the bush," Nathan said.
"True." Vera sighed and ran a hand through her gorgeous red locks. "I got cold feet."
"Obviously."
She glared at him, and he raised his hands defensively. "I got cold feet because I realized you didn't deserve this," Vera explained. "Anna didn't either. She had been screwed by the Empire as badly as I had been, but kept going. At first, I hated you. You had become a bastion where I failed. You had what I wanted. But..." Nathan waited. "But you lost everything to become a bastion," she said. "Your family, your home, your title, all gone. And here you are, a bastion so excellent that even Leopold is impressed. Maybe there was a reason I failed to get into the academy. Maybe there wasn't. But I at least know it's wrong to hold it against you. I couldn't help but imagine if our roles were switched. You're even a sorcerer, and your thirst for knowledge about bastions must be as great as mine, given how much you've learned so fast." Vera raised her arms into the air in a shrug, palms open, and gave him a helpless look. For the first time, Nathan saw her not as a powerful sorceress, but simply as somebody who was struggling to find their path in life. Paths. Nathan saw a lot of diverging paths for people these days. For a man who disliked contemplating his own future, he found himself guiding or shaping the futures of far too many people. This time, that future might end very quickly, depending on his decision.
"And do you have cold feet now?" Nathan asked.
his voice echoed within the tower.
The plan was for me to signal Seraph once I got to the top of the tower. She would attack, which would distract your champions and Leopold. Anna's army will clump up in the center of the battlefield as they try to capitalize on the opening they've made in the Federation ranks, Vera explained. Easy prey for my spells, especially empowered with my cairn.
You're dodging the question, Nathan said. Besides, how did you plan to deal with me, or any other champion that went with you? Until you reconnect with your cairn, you're far weaker than a monogem champion or bastion.
Vera smirked and wiggled her fingers in the air. Her many rings glimmered in the light. Nathan's eyes ran across the many other pieces of jewelry and adornments on Vera's outfit. He had written them off as aesthetic choices.
It suddenly occurred to him that might have been a mistake.
What's one of the most obvious tactics to use when facing a sorcerer in control of a cairn? Vera said.
Prevent them from using the cairn in the first place, Nathan answered.
He stared at her jewelry. His fingers twitched, but he kept his cool.
He left his sword in its sheath and didn't touch its hilt.
Vera hummed.
You had Faye beat Sen black and blue in the forest. But in my tower, an enemy is more likely to use some grander spell to cut me off. So I have my own tricks to remain connected to my cairn. I didn't lie to you that I'm not connected to it.
Your jewelry. It channels magic, Nathan said dully.
That's right. Each of my rings and chains is tethered to the cairn. Even if my connection is severed, their connections remain.
So long as I'm inside my tower, I can always draw on my cairn, Vera said triumphantly. She had an edge that Nathan hadn't anticipated.
With the backing of her cairn, Vera held the raw power of a monogem champion. Unlike Sen, who lacked the speed and expertise to cast spells while under attack by Fae, Vera was an accomplished sorceress. The Imperial Sorcerer's Lodge recognized her.
So you eliminate anybody who accompanied you with the element of surprise, Nathan said. Or at least you could have, if you hadn't told me about your trick.
I haven't exactly lost the power of my cairn, Vera said dryly.
No, but if you wanted to blow me away, you would have done it the moment I turned around earlier.
Nathan crossed his arms.
I'm a bastion. I have a binding stone backing me. Giving me any chance to regain the advantage is enormously risky.
Goddess, you're so damn condescending, Vera snapped. For all you know, Seraph is waiting in the shadows and will blow a hole in your head the moment I snap my fingers.
Maybe. Like I said, I do plan for contingencies. There's a reason I came by myself, Nathan answered.
Really? Vera shook her head. Fine, then. Humor me. Let's assume I don't have cold feet. I have my cairn. I'm more powerful than you expect. Dozens of summons swarm out from the walls around you. Seraph steps out from the shadows. The doors are locked, and you can't get out.
Vera pointed a finger at Nathan.
You are the most important bastion in this battle. In this region, even. If you go down, both Sunstorm and Fae lose their power. Leopold will surely retreat the moment he realizes you're dead. The Federation will sweep the battle, and then Garrick County, before the Empire can react. Tanius wins.
Nathan grimaced. On the one hand, she was right.
On the other hand, that was only true if the Federation could win the battle after he went down.
Not quite, Nathan said. You're forgetting one thing.
What?
I'm a bastion, Nathan said.
When Vera scoffed, he pointed at the ground below him. Presumably, the cairn sat down there.
I control the ley lines here, through the binding stone.
You may control the cairn, but I can manipulate the magic that leads to it, Nathan said.
Vera stared at him, confused. He continued,
The moment I realize that I'm in an unwinnable battle and cannot escape, I'll overload the cairn. The tower, everybody in it, and within a few hundred meters, will be killed.
You're kidding, Vera said.
It's a fairly normal contingency plan for hopeless situations, Nathan said.
Or at least it became one in his timeline. Cairns were simple to overload.
I may even be able to survive it, given I have a lot of power in my binding stone.
But if you don't, you die, Vera said, her voice hollow.
Your only plan if you were wrong about me was to take down everybody with you? Are you aware of how insane that sounds? You were so certain that you could stop me or that Seraph wasn't here that the only backup plan you came up with was to take us with you.
Her voice echoed off the walls.
Nathan suspected the soldiers outside heard her. Eventually there comes a battle that can't be won, Nathan said.
His eyes bore into Vera's.
Goddess, of course there is, Vera spat back. But there's a difference between recklessly walking into a potential death trap and throwing every possible trick at a situation before shrugging your shoulders and blowing yourself to pieces. Imagine if that was my solution. By the time you opened the gateway to my tower to save me, this place would have been a smoking ruin.
If you're my enemy, why should you care? Nathan asked.
Fuck you! Vera shouted, and tried to strangle him from across the room. Haven't you realized it by now? I don't care about Seraph's plan. To hell with Tanius and being a bastion. But you, I think you need to step back for a second and remember that there's a long road ahead of you.
Nathan remained silent. Something about Vera's words clicked with him. He had a strange sense of déjà vu, but realized it was for a different reason.
This isn't a glorious last stand, Vera said. You only became a bastion months ago. If you die, you throw away years of dreams of everybody who wanted to become one. What about Faye, Sunstorm, Sen? Even the unicorn girl who stares at your ass when she thinks nobody is looking. What happens to them after you're gone?
Their faces flashed in his mind. So did their older faces, from Nathan's original timeline. In that moment, Nathan realized his error.
You're right, Nathan admitted, closing his eyes.
Vera blinked. You mean it?
I didn't plan ahead enough, Nathan said. He ran a hand through his hair and looked at the door. I do want there to be a future for everybody. Maybe I was a little too fatalistic.
A little? You basically said that if you were wrong, then death was inevitable, Vera replied. She sighed.
I'm telling you this because the others won't. Your girls admire you to an almost unhealthy extent. You've earned that admiration, but I see a lot of Leopold in you. Being too competent can be a problem as well, as when you finally slip up, you fail to see a way out. I'm used to failure, but you? I get the feeling your first real setback was when your father came back, decided he didn't like you, and disowned you.
Leaving aside that this related to his implanted memories, Nathan understood the comparison. He knew the sting of failure better than she thought he did, but he had risen to greatness far faster than most, and he also understood the Leopold comparison. Leopold Tyrum, the right-hand man of the Emperor, and potentially the most accomplished bastion in the Anfang Empire. He had died gloriously in defense of the Empire in Nathan's timeline, but most people disliked him. Now that Nathan knew him personally, he saw dimensions that nobody had ever described to him. Leopold was competent, but Nathan saw in him the mistakes that had led to the downfall of the Empire. A highly competent bastion mired in politics, uncomfortable with his position and dedicated to his friends, including the Emperor. Nathan had made similar missteps. They had cost many lives. Falmir had changed drastically as a result of them. And, in the end, he had only barely escaped the consequences due to a mysterious messenger who offered him an escape from the end of everything.
Assuming that Nathan believed that this new start counted as escape, he needed to avoid making those mistakes again. What he wanted was a future that he could enjoy with those he cared for and loved. Vera was right that he had been too hasty to risk his life like this. He had only used his contingency plan against Kadria to detonate the Binding Stone after she destroyed his fortress and killed everyone. Back then, he had nothing left to lose. But now, he had everything to lose. With a deep sigh, Nathan got his thoughts in order.
I'll take that on the chin, and maybe more comments after the battle. But if you have decided to fight with the Empire and not the Federation, why don't we end this battle?
I thought you would never ask, Vera said with a bright smile. She bounced toward the stairs, and the two ascended to the top of the tower. Chapter 39. Seraph never made an appearance during the battle. Even after Vera sent the signal to lure her out, the Duo Gem champion remained absent. Presumably, she knew that Vera had reneged on the deal. How Seraph knew was another question. She had been described as a savvy operative and commander. Perhaps she smelled a trap and steered clear. Neither Vera nor Nathan found any trace of a spell that might have allowed Seraph to spy on them. Without their commander and savior, the Federation army collapsed. Vera's spells devastated them. The soldiers broke and fled. Many surrendered on the spot, rather than be run down by hundreds of heavily armed beastkin. The rest ran as fast as they could in the opposite direction of the battle. Faye saw an opportunity and seized it. She cut off retreat to the east. Leopold used the same trick, but with less swiftness. He tore the earth apart in front of those fleeing north. Soldiers tumbled into ditches and crashed into pillars of dirt. Desperately trying to scramble to safety, many soon realized how hopeless their retreat was and gave in to the pursuing Empire warriors. Nathan watched from the top of the tower as a Federation army of thousands dwindled into mere hundreds. Those in the enemy camp didn't bother to flee. The Empire's reputation for mercy prevented a desperate last stand from taking place, or any foolish moves from the Federation soldiers. After the battle, the prisoners were segregated from the Empire's army. The officers were split out from the common soldiers, and any would-be nobles identified, although the nature of the Federation made it more difficult to identify who was important. In the Federation, a noble might be a merchant who bought the land and title. His wealth makes him valuable, but he probably wasn't important. His family would pay a handsome ransom to see him returned, but the impact he would have on any war or negotiations was effectively none. Nathan cared little about these prisoners, although he knew that the ransoms were a nice bonus for the troops and nobles involved in the battle. But if the noble was somebody in a genuine position of influence, then they mattered a lot. Federation titles were inconsistent due to the mishmash of countries they had absorbed. A mere lord could be one of the most important people on the battlefield. Fortunately, Nathan had Sunstorm to help him. She knew many of the nobles involved in the Federation offensive and the neighboring regions. Although the nobles were shocked to see her wandering around the prisoner camp and investigating them, she picked out the most important prisoners of war. These high-ranking prisoners became the men and women that Nathan would send back with Leopold after this campaign. Their testimony would serve as proof of the Federation's intent to invade the Empire and cover Nathan's ass. As for the rest, Nathan left them to Anna to handle. Her advisor Kuda likely knew how to handle ransoms and releasing the prisoners. Nobody wanted to slaughter the surrendered soldiers simply because they fought for the wrong side. At the same time, releasing them back to the Federation without any penalty could be described as unwise. The enemy soldiers could simply turn back up at the next major battle. Ransoms were an effective financial penalty to both the combatant and the nation. The Federation would be less willing to engage in battles. The soldiers were dissuaded from fighting, knowing they might lose more money than they were being paid. And the nobles were especially dissuaded from fighting a losing battle, as their ransoms were exceedingly high. Assuming the noble made it back at all,
No doubt they noticed several of their number being carted off by Sunstorm to separate tents. When your last memory of a general of a losing battle was them being taken away by the victor, a man thought long and hard about being the general of the next battle. War was a poor business for everyone involved. The Federation started this one for profit. It didn't hurt to remind them that losing a war was very unprofitable. Leopold wandered up to Nathan and clapped him on the back.
"Not joining the celebrations?" he asked.
"I'll need a clear head tomorrow," Nathan replied.
"You're planning to make a move tomorrow?" Leopold asked. "No time to celebrate?"
Shaking his head, Nathan said,
"It's not about making a move tomorrow. It's about being ready. I'll let others celebrate for me."
The two of them stared out at the soldiers before them. Tankards of ale were passed between many of the men and women. Happiness was the order of the night. Many of these soldiers had seen death for the first time, and they didn't like it. They drank to forget. They drank to celebrate their first victory. They drank because others were drinking. Leopold spoke up.
"You and Vera were in the tower for a long time."
"Were we?" Nathan responded blandly. Leopold remained silent for several seconds. Eventually, he clapped Nathan on the back again and smirked.
"Fine, keep your secrets," he said. "You've done well. I expected things to go worse, but you've planned and dealt with all the eventualities. Or maybe it's just dumb luck."
"How kind of you," Nathan said dryly. Chuckling, Leopold wandered off into the night. He snatched a tankard that a soldier offered and joined in the celebrations with the rest of the men and women. True to his word, Nathan didn't join in. Instead, he patrolled the exterior of the camp, just in case. The night was long, especially for a sober man. Come morning, Nathan woke up to find himself with a lap full of beastkin. Faye groaned when he woke up and pushed her off him. Her cat ears twitched, and her eyelids flickered as she began to slowly awaken.
"It's too bright," Faye moaned.
Clearly, she had been out late with the other beastkin. Her hair and face were a mess. Nathan took some time out of his morning to clean her up. She enjoyed the grooming session, her purring a sure sign that she wanted more, but Nathan chose to avoid anything adult. There would be plenty of time for fun after the campaign. Right now, they had another battle to plan. Most of Nathan's war cabinet was present in the command tent when he arrived. Anna, Leopold, Vera, and Kuda were present. Sunstorm arrived not long after Nathan. Notably, Sen was missing. Nathan wrote her off, as he had spotted her guzzling down far too much ale the previous night. Faye also noticed her absence, and she ducked her head. No doubt the beastkin felt at least some guilt that her drinking competition with Sen was the cause of her absence.
"Don't worry about Sen," Nathan said to Faye.
"She's learning a hard lesson about moderating her drinking while on campaign."
Faye nodded, but still looked guilty. Nathan debated pushing the subject further. In the end, he let it drop and started the meeting.
"Sunstorm, before I start, any sign of Federation troops nearby?" Nathan asked.
Sunstorm shook her head. Taking that as a sign she hadn't noticed anything else of note, Nathan chose to get on with the show.
"I trust we've all had an enjoyable evening," Nathan said.
"I have. I don't know about you," Leopold said with a smirk.
"We won. That made things enjoyable enough for me."
Nathan shrugged. Anna rolled her eyes. Her face showed no signs of a long night. She must have retired relatively early, or at least avoided drinking too much with her nobles. Nathan knew that she had enjoyed more than a few glasses of wine with them. No surprise, given this was her first campaign and was a wild success so far. By contrast, Leopold showed his age. The old man had bags under his eyes and looked as if he hadn't slept for a few days. His voice croaked, and he sounded almost as if he'd swallowed a bag of gravel. Despite that, he seemed lively enough. If he was willing to crack jokes, then that probably meant he was fine to plan the rest of the campaign.
"We're not taking at least one more day?" Anna asked.
"Another day is fine," Nathan said,
but that doesn't change the fact that we need to plan ahead.
So this meeting is purely about planning our next move? Anna pressed.
It's about ensuring that we don't lose our momentum, Nathan clarified.
When the others looked at him in confusion, Nathan held back a sigh. Leopold understood, but everybody else was too new to warfare to understand the issue that Nathan was trying to avoid. Nathan scratched his head and tried not to sigh.
We've won one victory, but our objective is to take Fort Tobram. Many campaigns end because they let the soldiers spend too much time looting, celebrating, or doing whatever the hell they want. That's why it's important that we know when we're moving on the fort.
Anna frowned. We just crushed the Federation Army. Are we really that worried about time?
She looked around at the others.
Leopold raised an eyebrow at Nathan, but said nothing. He left this entirely to Nathan. Normally, Nathan would think this is a little too much, but he wasn't a normal bastion, so he wasn't worried.
Our real opponent isn't the Federation Army, Nathan said. While it takes time to rally new troops and rebuild an army, the Federation has plenty of other champions and bastions. Now that we're threatening them, we're on the clock. Every day that we waste is a day that another champion or a bastion could bail out Fias and Seraph.
Vera interjected. Seraph should be the only one in Fort Tobram. You're worried about other champions arriving in the next few days?
Yes.
Murmuring met his pronouncement. Kuda whispered something in Anna's ear. She brushed him off, but Nathan wondered if she had sent something to her nobles regarding the time between this battle and the next. Whatever the case, Nathan didn't have the option to care. Victory was close. If Seraph was the brains behind Fias, then capturing or killing her at Fort Tobram would end this campaign. The Federation would surely counterattack, but the opening moves in the war would be a solid victory for the Empire. Other nations would think twice before intervening to help the Federation, and that left room for Leopold and the Emperor to work their political magic.
Fort Tobram will have its own garrison defending it, Leopold said. We'll still need to defeat it. Besieging a fortress is not easy, especially when defended by a duo gem champion. If we're in such a rush, how do we have the time to lay siege to a fortress?
Nathan knew that Leopold's question wasn't overly serious, but sometimes he wondered if the old man knew how to be slightly less infuriating. No wonder Vera disliked him. Asking leading questions like this is the sort of thing that makes people dislike you.
I'm not worried about taking Fort Tobram, Nathan replied. The trick is engaging Seraph sooner rather than later. Once she's tied up with our forces, then I can put my plan into action. But if she has reinforcements, or if Fias does something drastic, such as abandoning Forzel Valley, then I'll need to drastically alter my plan.
That sounds like you have an impressive plan, Leopold frowned.
Nathan hadn't explained to Leopold how he planned to seize Fort Tobram. No doubt the old bastion had a few ideas. Nathan doubted that any of those ideas were close to the mark. Then again, maybe Leopold had a more active imagination than Nathan gave him credit for.
How long will it take Fias to get down to Fort Tobram? Anna asked.
Realistically, a day. Maybe two. Nathan waved a hand in the air as if to dismiss the concern that his words raised. A better question is, how long will it take Fias to panic after Seraph tells him the bad news about this battle?
Sunstorm scoffed.
He'll panic immediately, but he won't act straight away. The regents have ordered him to hold Forzel Valley, so he'll be loath to retreat.
Would he be likely to attack us if we besieged Fort Tobram? Anna asked.
Unlikely, Sunstorm said. Given the Federation is losing, he'll revert to his cowardly self. The regents can't exactly threaten him with death if he thinks he's going to die anyway.
Leopold chuckled and shook his head.
If there's one thing that idiot appears to be good at, it's recognizing when he's lost. He pulled out of the battle against my champions in Forzel Valley far earlier than most bastions would.
Sunstorm and Leopold exchanged smirks. Their shared disdain for Fias forged a bond between them.
"So that means we have a few days to reach Fort Tobram?" Anna suggested.
"At most," Nathan said. "I'm assuming that you want to use all of those few days."
"If I can, then yes," Anna replied. "Unless we have anything pressing that requires us to march tomorrow or the day after, then I'd appreciate if we have 3 days encamped here. Fort Tobram is only a day or two's march north, isn't it?"
After further discussion, they came to an agreement to give Anna the 3 days that she wanted. Nathan didn't know why she needed 3 days specifically. He didn't especially care. In the end, Anna had her reasons, presumably noble reasons, and she was lending him her army. Sunstorm kept an eye out to the north and patrolled significant distances to look for any errant Federation forces that might be of concern. Other than a few small patrols from the towns and nearby forts, she found nothing of interest. Smaller forts and watchtowers dotted the region. With the time they had available, Nathan sent out Faye and Sen to chase away any Federation soldiers using these defensive positions. Anna's soldiers then took over some of the more heavily fortified locations. They would serve as supply depots and potentially future defensive positions. Nathan sincerely hoped that they wouldn't need to be used to defend against the Federation. That would imply a major Federation counteroffensive in the future, or that he had failed to push farther into Federation territory before things turned against them. The 3 days passed. Anna kept herself busy with her nobles. Additional wagons carrying supplies arrived toward the tail end of the 3rd day. This wasn't what Anna was waiting for, but she took credit for it anyway. A report from Sunstorm indicated that additional soldiers were traveling through the pass, bearing Anna's emblem. Anna gave no indication to Nathan that they would join the attack on Fort Tobram. Presumably, these soldiers were here to hold Garrick Pass and to capture additional Federation territory. Nathan let her do what she wished. He had his own job to do. His battle with Seraph grew closer.
Chapter 40. Sen ducked her head through the flap of Nathan's tent. She raised an eyebrow at the noises coming from within, especially now that she saw the source.
"Standing outside, I expected to see both of you wearing much less clothing," Sen said.
Faye mewled. "It just feels so good." She arched her back and her bushy tail stuck out straight.
"What have I told you about moving while I'm grooming you?" Nathan said, patting Faye on the ass.
She fell back into his lap and flicked her tail against his chest. Nathan gestured for Sen to enter the tent. She slipped inside and let the flap fall shut behind her. Glancing back at the entrance, Sen said,
"Wouldn't it be a good idea to place some sort of noise suppression spell on the tent?"
"Easier said than done. The tent isn't made from the sturdiest material, and it doesn't provide a proper seal from the outside air," Nathan explained. "Furthermore, spells need to be powered, and I have better things to use my magic on than preventing others from hearing Faye's moans."
"Hey," Faye whined.
Nathan ran a hand along her tail, and she quietened down.
Or at least as quiet as she got while being groomed.
Sen took a seat on a nearby crate and closely watched Faye's reactions. The beastkin moaned, mewled, and let out more than her fair share of obscene noises.
"Yeah, definitely still sounds like sex," Sen shook her head. "Not that I came in here to perv or anything."
"Then what did you come in here for? We're taking the fort tomorrow, so it's a good idea to get some sleep," Nathan said.
"I should say that to you," Sen replied. "It seems like you'll be up all night keeping this little kitty company. She's raring to go, judging by the smell." "Are you sure you—"
Faye tried to glare at Sen, but the effect was muted by the way her eyes curved and the moans that escaped her lips every few seconds.
"I don't plan to do anything more after this. As always when I'm campaigning, I intend for this to be an early night," Nathan said.
"It's impossible to get him to have any fun," Faye complained.
She pushed herself against Nathan, rubbing her scent into his clothes.
He ignored her and continued to stroke her tail and rub her ears.
Is that what the glass is for? I thought you didn't drink while campaigning, Sen said.
She pointed to a small tumbler full of amber liquid.
That's not for me, Nathan said dryly.
Faye pointedly ignored Sen's stare.
Is that to calm her nerves? Sen asked Nathan. I'm not nervous.
Somehow, Faye's denial made her sound more nervous. Nathan shook his head in response to Sen's question.
Less nervous, more hyperactive. I have no doubt that she'll be fine in the battle tomorrow. What I'm worried about is that she'll try to keep me up all night. And we both know exactly what she'll do when she gets bored.
The exact same thing that she's trying to do to you right now?
Sen grinned. Their banter continued for several minutes, and Faye complained the entire time. Nathan idly wondered what the soldiers outside felt about this. No doubt it sounded like he was having sex with one woman while joking around with another. Assuming any soldiers were out there to begin with. He was a bastion, not exactly high on the list of targets that needed protection. His soldiers were more likely to be killed by anybody powerful enough to harm Nathan. Most people that tried to stab him would find their blades shattered on impact with his body.
I'm surprised that you're not with Sunstorm right now,
Nathan commented, changing the subject. Sen grimaced.
We've been together most of the day, but she tends to get a bit awkward at night.
I was going to ask about that. Things haven't improved?
Nathan asked. Sen held a palm up, facing flat toward the ground, and shook it back and forth.
Kind of? It doesn't help that what we think of you and each other is vastly different. She's very keen to pick up where we left off. I am much more in tune with old me than she is, so I feel that she is falling back on our relationship more.
The look that Faye gave Sen was strange, but that was understandable. Not only was the relationship between Sen and Sunstorm confusing, but there was the memory situation to contend with. Faye didn't know about the alternate timeline. Sen and Sunstorm did, even if their memories were incomplete. At the same time, Sen and Sunstorm remembered their past from this world, which included a sexual relationship between the two of them.
If you're not interested in her, you can say no, Nathan said.
The thing is,